Hello, fellow true crime lovers. Welcome to another episode of Dimes of Crime. Here's your host, Richa.
And this is Haley.
Yay. We tried this a few times and it finally worked, so I'm glad. The excitement was too much to hide from you guys. But back to our regularly scheduled programming. What are you drinking, Haley?
Corona. I've been kind of drinking all day, so yay for being an alcoholic.
Is this another fun Haley episode? No, just normal.
No, because I've been like eating and then like day drinking and then eating. And...
Oh, so you're like well oiled for drinking. That's good. That's the better kind of drinking that I like. Day drinking and not eating is like a recipe for disaster for me personally.
Yeah, you just fall asleep at 7 o'clock and then.
Yeah, and then you wake up with a ginormous headache and you still have to take care of a toddler.
Yeah. I've been looking at these new jobs too, where I'll be working till like 5 in the morning and I'm like, I'm gonna have to get like a nanny in the
morning. 5 in the morning?
Yeah, they're bar jobs. So like it's just really busy. They do like 1500 covers and whatever. And I don't know if I'm gonna do it because the hours are just a lot when you're a toddler mom.
That's insane. Yeah, that just sounds exhausting because it's not like crew is going to just be like, okay, mom, I'm just going to let you sleep for the next 10 hours.
Right. Well, he is starting daycare in August, so that should help. And then Connor would be able to drop him off at daycare. Or I'd get a morning nanny to come and relieve Connor and take the morning stuff. And then I would work. I would take him until, because the shift doesn't start till 10. So it'd be like bedtime and all the other stuff. But anyways, let's not talk about our boring lives. What are you drinking?
Well, I drank white wine earlier today, so I'm not drinking anything now. But I did drink white wine earlier, so right now I'm just sticking to water. Okay, well, before we get into our case for today, all the disclaimers still apply. You know, if you're listening to us not on headphones and you are around kids or husbands who don't like true crime like ours don't, then put us on headphones and be courteous of other people around you. We also occasionally discuss gore and graphic details for some of the cases. And so just a fair warning. And yeah, that's it.
Listener discretion is advised.
That is correct. Side note, right before I got on, I was checking our Instagram, which I rarely do. And I don't know, Haley, if you have a listener reached out to us to cover a case in our DMs.
Oh,
it just slid into our DMs. Yeah, I'm not going to disclose too much about obviously who the listener is and what the case is because I did read up on it. And there's a very special note on the listener on why she wants us to cover it. She, he, or they, I'm not sure, wants us to cover it. And so, yeah, maybe sometime in the future I will because I did do my research on it because it was an interesting DM. So shout out to whoever that is, and you know who you are if you are listening to us. So in the future, keep your ears peeled for me covering that case.
Yeah, I didn't see it, but you should message them and see if they want a shout out too for the recommendation.
Will do. All right, so today we are going to be going to Portland, Oregon. I don't think we've covered a case in Oregon before that. If we have, I can't remember. I, as a side note, love Portland, and Oregon in general. It's beautiful. It's a beautiful state, lots of nature. I visited a few times and I've loved it both times. All right. So we're going to jump right into it. Are you ready, Haley?
Yeah, I like Oregon. Let's go.
Okay. So it's June 2nd, 2018 in Portland, Oregon, and two officers are responding to a 911 call at the Oregon Culinary Institute, also called OCI. Funny story slash side note about the abbreviation OCI. Every time I was researching this case and that came up in my head, OCI also stands for Overseas Citizens of India, which I am or will be in the future. It's just sort of a status you get when you give up your Indian citizenship for another country's, because India doesn't allow dual citizenship. But if you still want to visit home without, you know, having to go through the whole tourist visa process, it's a nice little thing to have. So it's a lifelong tourist visa to India. Whatever. I'm just going to go back to what it was.
So it's their version of dual citizenship?
It's their version. You're not a citizen, but you get some perks of being an ex-citizen, I guess. So you won't need like a tourist visa to come back in. You know, my husband and my future children and current children can apply for it. It's just, there's a lot of benefits to it. Yeah.
That's
nice. So two officers are responding to a 911 call from the Oregon Culinary Institute, also called OCI. It was a call about a potential homicide where a witness came up on an unconscious older man's body with a gunshot wound to his back. When detectives walk in, they see a man lying on the kitchen floor in front of a sink. If I hadn't explained this already, OCI is not just a culinary institute, but from all the sources I read, it was also a restaurant. The students at the institute would cook 3-course lunches and 4-course dinners that they had made in the process of them learning how to cook. The body was found in what the officers described as an instructional kitchen known as Kitchen One. The victim of the shooting was a man named Daniel Brophy, a chef and also an instructor at the OCI. Dan Brophy was a longtime instructor, approximately 12 years at the OCI. He had been there since OCI originally opened and had also been a chef for more than 40 years. That's 4 decades, guys. That's a long time to do anything, really. He was 63 years old when he was killed. The officers, obviously, per usual, start to trace Dan's steps and determine a timeline of what had happened in that day and earlier that day. They soon discover that he had driven there in his white pickup truck that was parked by the school and entered OCI at about 7:22 a.m. And 10 minutes later is when the 911 call was made by a student at the institute. According to the detectives, in looking at the scene, quickly determined that he was first shot in the back, at which point he probably turned, and then was shot again in his chest. Investigators found 2 9mm shell casings, but no murder weapon was found at the scene. Mm. It looked like someone just wanted to get in and get out. And so they eliminated a professional hitman because the professional would have likely picked up the shell casings. But they did describe the murder as an execution-style murder. The person just came in, shot them twice, shot Dan Brophy twice, and left. As students and the other instructors arrived at OCI that day, the news of the murder started to spread. 2 hours later, the detectives brought in Dan Brophy's wife, Nancy, who was ushered to the crime scene. Nancy told the police Dan had left their house around 7:05 a.m. to go to work, and she was still in bed when he had left. When the officers tell Nancy that Dan was the one that in fact had been killed in the shooting, she says, I quote, "I don't care who shot him. I just want him back. I don't want him dead," end quote. Everyone was wondering who could have done it.
Sad. But I was going to say, I mean, there's nothing you can do and can't get him back. Sorry.
Yeah, no. And honestly, I one of my sources here is the Dateline episode that was done on this. It's actually called Murder in Kitchen One. And they actually play excerpts of the interview with Nancy. Initial interview anyway, and she's crying. And to me, I honestly hadn't heard about this story before, or the name didn't ring a bell, so I knew nothing about it when I was watching the case, when I was watching the Dateline episode. And looking at it from that lens, her emotions seemed genuine. Like, she was genuinely distraught that her husband had of 20 years had been killed by someone. So anyways, everyone's wondering who could have done it and why. And some people theorize that it could have been a disgruntled student that Dan maybe rubbed the wrong way. Some people that worked with Dan and had learned from Dan described him as sometimes being a little abrasive when he was teaching. He had high standards and he expected as much from his students. So now let's take a peek into Dan's life. Dan was also a marine biologist who loved the beach and foraging for mushrooms. That's such a random fact. Mushrooms. But I also love mushrooms. Do you like mushrooms? Because Drew hates mushrooms.
Yeah, so does Connor and Swinney.
Yeah.
I like mushrooms, yeah.
I love mushrooms. Like,
but are we talking like forage for like shrooms, like magic mushrooms?
No. He foraged for like actual like mushrooms that were edible. I guess the other magic mushrooms are edible too, so I'm not sure you can eat them all,
right?
Other than the poisonous ones, right? It's funny because the Dateline episode says that people describe Dan Brophy as having quirky sense of humor and eventually started describing these things he said as Brophyisms. And I think one of the persons they interviewed in the episode says he said something like, you can eat every kind of mushroom once because sometimes they can be poisonous and then you die.
I like his humor. I like it.
Yeah. It's like they described it as a very dark humor. Anyway, so he was a marine biologist who loved the beach and foraging for mushrooms. In fact, he often took his students from the OCI on field trips to share his passion for not just food, but the wonders of nature. He also had a philanthropic side, soft side to himself, where he helped his parents feed the homeless every week at a church not too far away from the OCI. Overall, he was not only a successful chef, but a well-rounded citizen of his community. Nancy was his second wife. Nancy had moved to Oregon from Texas and was also divorced before she met Dan. Dan and Nancy met at the OCI.
She's from Texas.
And they made an instant connection. She is from Texas.
I was going to say, red flag. Just kidding. Just kidding,
no
Texas.
Offense to people from Texas. Just kidding.
Offense is probably taken.
Seriously, I actually do love Austin a lot. I have only visited San Antonio and Dallas a few times. I'm not a big fan of Houston. Sorry, whoever lives in Houston. I just don't think it's my favorite.
Do people from Houston like Houston?
If you live in Houston, do you like it? I mean, there's really great food in Houston. I will give them that. I go there for work every now and then because my company's headquarters are there. And they do have really good Indian food, which I enjoy, but it is just so hot. So hot.
Mm-hmm. That's what I've heard. I've actually never been to Texas.
Oh, really? Austin's really fun. You should check it out. I really do like Austin.
I have heard good things about Austin.
Yeah. It has a good food scene, microbrewery scene, or just drinking scene in general. There's really cool parts to Austin. Anyways... So they made an instant connection. Nancy graduated from OCI and opened up her own catering business shortly after. And then shortly after opening her catering business, Dan and Nancy decided to get married. Dan's son, Nathaniel, who he had from a previous marriage, ended up actually working for Nancy's catering company for a while. Everyone described them as a normally perfect couple next door. And I say normally perfect couple because... it is absolute pet peeve of mine when every time someone's talking about someone's marriage in past tense, they're like, they were the perfect couple. No one's the perfect couple. Everyone has tiffs mm-hmm. and disagreements and arguments. In fact, the perfect couple in my mind is someone that is a couple that communicates well. And part of the communicating well is communicating to each other that sometimes you're annoying.
Well, just to say, some people say Bonnie and Clyde were the perfect couple.
And maybe they were. Maybe their relationship on just a relationship status was like really healthy, but they themselves were very unhealthy individuals. I'm just saying like relationships can't be described as perfect. Like it's just weird to me when people say they were perfect. They never fought. They were just always on the same page. That's a red flag to me. But maybe it's because I'm crazy and I'll listen and talk about too much true crime.
I don't know. But yeah, a lot of true crime, that's what they say. And it always shows like this picture perfect family. And there's always struggles behind closed doors that all come out when somebody's murdered.
You know, like I think about this, like every time someone's talking about a victim, you know, obviously they're really sad, but they all describe them as this like larger than life personality mm-hmm. that lit up they the walk room into with the their room, smile. Yep. Yeah. Yep. And I'm just like, if someone, you know, if something happens to me, God forbid something happens to me, no one who knows me is going to describe me that way. I'm known to have a resting bitch face. I'm socially awkward when you first meet me. I take time to warm up to people unless I'm drunk, which I was when Haley and I was hanging out together first time. I'm very easy to please and very easy to get along with when I have some liquid courage in my body. My social anxiety is at a little bit of an ease. Plus, I think when I had met Haley, like, I just do better in smaller social situations. Like, mm-hmm, I met Haley mm-hmm. when it was just, what, 3 new people versus us, like, going into a party and there were, like, 25 new people. So that's a little mm-hmm. bit of an easier situation for me to handle.
Well, also, that, like, for me, I'm super outgoing.
That's true. You will, like, force the other person to talk.
Yeah. Like, I'm going to just sit there and, like, trap you until you start having a conversation with me. Exactly. So, I mean, that kind of helps the situation sometimes.
Yeah.
But I also don't think people would describe me that way. Like, I'm described as a mean person sometimes. So, I don't know. I don't, it'd be interesting.
Yeah. Maybe, I always think, I always think about
that
when
you
die, like,
you can just float and look over your funeral to see what people are saying.
I think about that all the time. Is that weird? That's crazy. That
no, I think that's normal.
That is bizarre. I've never actually verbalized that out loud because I thought I was weird for thinking about that. But I'm so glad you said it. And for everyone listening who thinks that's a dark thought, please don't DM us about it. Like, don't say anything about it because I literally will not care. Speaking of which, I'm an introvert and Drew's an introvert. Like, I'm an introvert disguised as an extrovert. Drew is a pure introvert sometimes, I feel like. But Leo, our son, is an absolute ham and an extrovert of a person. He's more extroverted than Drew and I combined are introverted. Like, he absolutely gets energized by me being around people. It's uncanny.
Uh-oh.
It's actually a little weird.
You're going to have that open door policy where all his friends come over.
Yeah, he's definitely showing that personality trait for sure. All right, going back to our story, that was kind of a long tangent, so I'm sorry. Everyone described them as the normally perfect couple next door. Nancy eventually sold her catering business due to physical limitations because she just couldn't do all the physical stuff that was involved as part of the business, and she started selling insurance. Her real passion, although later, is that she finds out was writing. She started writing murder fiction novels, books like The Wrong Cop, The Wrong Lover, and The Wrong Husband, and a lot more. Dan and Nancy clearly had a full life, and so the question still remains, who would want to kill Dan? Detectives noticed that the killer left Dan's wallet, watch, his cell phone, and car keys untouched, so they also ruled out robbery as the motive. Even the expensive cooking equipment that was around him in the OCI was left alone and untouched. The theory of a disgruntled student was also ruled out as detectives started to interview everyone. A lot of people said, yes, he could be harsh in his teaching sometimes, but almost everyone they interviewed attributed some of their success or all of their success in some ways to Dan when he taught them. If you guys are wondering, there were no security cameras inside or outside the institute to help with the investigation, which only made this harder. So just days after the murder, the detectives received a phone call from Nancy in regards to collecting life insurance, in which she said, this shit gets weird. I quote, my insurance company said, just have the detectives write a letter stating that you're no longer a suspect, end quote. Pause, wait, what the fuck? I mean, even if you need that letter, which, by the way, I don't think the cops will ever write. It's also absurd that an insurance company would ask for that in the middle of an active investigation. Like, why would it, and even if all those things were true, that the insurance company needed that letter, you were asked to provide that letter by the insurance company, why would you ask the police officer who is currently actively investigating the homicide of your beloved husband of 20 years? Like, that's just a weird phone call to make. And for those of you who are interested in more details of what this phone call entailed, you can actually listen to the entire, like, most of it on the Dateline episode. It is very intriguing. What was even weirder was that she had never been named a suspect officially. When the detectives asked her why she needed that, she said, I quote, well, they don't want to pay if it turns out that I secretly went down to the school and shot my husband, end quote. Wow, 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 wow. I mean, still baffled that she made that call. Also baffled that the police recorded it and had the foresight to record it. Spoiler alert, she fucking did it. Okay, I'm just going
to
say that.
Well, yeah, I was figuring I was getting to that.
Yeah, I was like, at this point, it's very obvious that I'm going into all these like little tidbits. So yeah, she did it. Since this was an active investigation, the police never were
sorry, going to- we are kind of a spoiler anyways, because we're a female only. So I feel like a lot of times that just cuts right to the chase.
That being said, though, we have covered quite a few cases where you're like, what? Like, I didn't expect that twist coming. So, I mean, you never know. It could be like someone's lover. It could be someone dressed up as a clown.
Still on the clown. Did you have nightmares that week?
Yes, legitimately had nightmares. Like, I legitimately opened my eyes one night and was afraid that I was going to wake up and see a clown like in front of my bed.
Scary.
Very creepy. Yeah. Anyway, so then since this was an active investigation, the police were never going to write that letter, which I said. As the detectives dug more into Nancy's past, they discovered that she had written a blog post titled How to Murder Your Husband back in 2011.
Oh my God, I know what case you're doing. 7 years
prior to the murder. I knew exactly. I knew when I said this little tidbit that Haley and most of you with your ears on this case would know exactly who I'm talking about. That combined.
Oh, this is like going. This is like happening recently, it is, though. Yeah. Right?
So we're gonna get into that. Yeah. So that combined with the very bizarre phone call that Nancy made to the cops did not help Nancy's case. The number one way she had listed in that blog post as a way to kill your husband was guns. While this had no real connection.
Okay, how dumb are you?
So again, I am going to preface this. While this had no real connection to the case, it was just a very odd coincidence and probably made the cops look into her even more. Especially when you then make that phone call.
That means she was thinking about it. That means she was thinking, if you write a blog post on how to kill your husband, then you probably have thought about it.
But here's my theory about the fact why she did these dumb things. There's a few options here, and I think I have one that in my mind I think is true. But that's, again, just speculation. I think she made these really dumb choices because she really expected, A, to get away with it, B, the cops to not look into it that much. Because she was so genuinely appearing to be like the, you know, distraught widow and sad, whatever else. And three, she honestly just, even being a fiction murder writer, did not think of all these things. Because I'm going to talk about more in this more about this case. And there's a lot more of dumb things that she did. And I just don't know, as someone who's written so many fiction murder novels, like, how do you not do a better job at planning? But again, continue to be dumb, everyone who commits crimes. I have no issue with that. I just genuinely just don't understand is, I guess, where I'm coming from. Anyway, so it was just an odd coincidence. And she also told the police that the insurance policy that she was calling about was only for $40,000, when in actuality, we will learn later, it was a lot more. Lo and behold, 3 months after the murder of Dan Brophy, police charge and arrest Nancy Brophy, his wife of 20 years, for the crime. In a blow to the prosecution's case on the first day of the trial, the judge ruled that they could not show the blog post to the jury as evidence. He claimed that it was not connected, it was years before the murder, and that it was circumstantial at best. For those of you who have...
I guess that's a good argument.
I mean, she did write it 7 years before that. Like, you know, it's like when people say, when you get famous and then people bring up like your stupid Twitter posts and like other things from like 7, 10 years ago, and they're like, you did this. I'm like, yeah, do you know how much stupid shit I said on my Facebook and Twitter like 7 years ago? That being said, it's all private, guys. Like, you literally cannot find what I said unless you're my friend, and I will not accept your friend request if you are not my friend in real life.
I can't handle my old posts.
Yeah, I sometimes look at mine. I
have like, oh my god, abbreviated weird words.
You know, when you do like LYK for like, and the number 4 for 4, and I was like, Richa, how lazy were you to write just the entire thing?
Mine are more like kind of that, but like just saying.
I mean, I have said dumb shit too, but it's just like, guys, like people are immature. Like, what is the point of judging a past stuff? Anyways.
But for real though, I mean, we've talked about this before. We're fucked. Like, if one of our husbands ends up murdered, they're going to go through our search history and be like, you're suspicious.
Yeah, I'm literally going to point to this podcast, which is, I've said this 15 million times. I'm so glad we have this podcast because it is not saying I'm going to murder anyone. I'm just saying, like, guys, we're there's actual proof to why I've looked up all these weird things, you know. Anyways.
Right, because most of them are stories like we've done.
Killer clown.
But regardless, they're going to be like, you're fascinated by this stuff, and they'll use it against us. But you know what's funny? I don't think about murdering my husband. I worry about him murdering me, but he'd be mad
if
he
heard that right now. Don't let him get a life insurance on you, and don't buy life insurance on him, and then you don't have a motive. So, dun dun dun. No motive, no crime. All right, so in a blow to the bar prosecution's case, they don't let them bring in the blog post. For those of you who have already connected the dots, this case was recently in the media, in the news not too long ago, because it took legitimately 4 years for Nancy's trial to start. The trial started this year in 2022, I believe in May of 2022. Despite that decision, the prosecution felt confident that they had a rock-solid case. Part of the evidence was Nancy's laptop that had been confiscated. Detectives found that in November 2017, about 7 months prior to the murder, Nancy had purchased a ghost gun. A ghost gun is a gun that has no serial number and is not registered. To Nancy's disappointment, the gun had come unassembled and she could not figure out how to put it together. So I guess she abandons that idea. So the investigators then also find that later she was researching Glocks and gun shops in the nearby Portland area. In February 2018, which was just 4 months before Dan's murder, Nancy finally went to a gun show and purchased a Glock that was registered in her own name. She actually admitted.
So I guess.
Yeah.
You're probably going to get into this, but life insurance?
Yeah, for sure.
Is that the motive?
For sure. Yeah.
Okay.
She also admitted to owning this gun when the police had talked to her. What she conveniently omitted from her story was that she also bought an extra slide and barrel. For a person like me who knows nothing about guns, honestly, absolutely clueless. I'm pretty sure I'm saying slide and barrel, but maybe it's slide barrel. I have no idea. These are things that you can use to hide the type of gun a bullet was shot from. So you can legitimately like change the firing chambers on a gun. And the only reason I know this is because they showed a video of it on Dateline of the cops doing it. And it changes like the markings on the bullet. And it like you can't trace it back to a gun.
Oh, that's crazy.
Yeah.
So shit like that should just not be made.
That's what I thought. I'm like, why do people sell
that stuff?
Is
literally just made for murder because, like, why, if you shot a deer, you don't need that.
Yeah. I mean, do you know what I mean? Like, if you guys have watched Tinder Swindler, there is a point where this guy who is a Tinder Swindler goes to a cosmetic surgeon and literally says he wants face altering surgery done and like all these things about his facial features to change, and the guy literally goes, only criminals want these surgeries and I'm not going to do them on you. And that's what I thought about with this particular purpose of slide barrel or slide barrel or whatever. Like, why do people make this?
It's like silencers. Like, it's for assassins. That's why they're made.
I mean, I guess maybe the military needs silencers. So I can think of like real life defensive strategies in the army that you would need like the silencer for, murder. But not something that hides what kind of gun. Like, that's just like creepy sketch true crime shit. Anyways, in other words, when they examined the shell casings found at the scene, they would not have matched Nancy's Glock. The investigators never found the extra slide and barrel or slide barrel, whatever it's called. The prosecution presented video footage from a pizza place across the street from OCI. Now, remember, the OCI, the Oregon Culinary Institute, didn't have security cameras inside or outside their premises, but businesses around OCI did have video surveillance. And so this pizza place across the street from OCI, when the cops went and checked the video on that, it actually showed Nancy's gray Toyota van drive by suspiciously very close to Dan's murder timing. Now, mind you, Nancy had told the detectives in her interview that when Dan left for work, she was still asleep in bed. From pictures of Nancy's car and comparing those to the truck in the video, because a lot of people can have a gray Toyota van, they actually match the exact scratch below the gas cap that Nancy's car had to the car in the video footage from the pizza place. By looking at the footage from other surrounding businesses in the area, they're actually able to determine an exact timeline of what happened. About 40 minutes prior to Dan's arrival at the OCI on June 2nd, 2018, you can see Nancy's Toyota gray van driving to the crime scene. Police think she was actually trying to find a place to watch Dan come in from. At about 7:10, 10 minutes before Dan had arrived, Nancy's car is seen driving again to the crime scene. And at 7:20 a.m., you see Dan driving by and parking next to the school. 2 minutes later is when he entered the school. And at 7:29, literally only 7 minutes after Dan had entered the OCI, you can see Nancy driving back home. Let's just take that in for a minute, because what that means is that she went in, shot her husband, who she had lived with and loved apparently for 20 years, twice, I might add, and then without hesitation left him there to die and drove back home.
That's I just insane. Would never understand.
That yeah. is so cold-hearted. I mean, no hesitation, guys. 7:22, Dan walks in, and somehow in 7 minutes, she's shot him twice and is driving back home in her car. It's bizarre. The last question here was motive, which is what Haley asked me earlier. Why did she kill him? Well, the prosecution said that it was the oldest motive in the book. Turns out they had money issues, and from her past jobs, she sold insurance and knew that business well. Detectives soon discovered that Nancy had put in multiple claims for life insurance on Dan, and in total, they were all going to pay out approximately $800,000 if Dan died. Nancy eventually took the stand in her own defense, where she denied killing her husband. She said she had bought the gun and the slide barrel as part of her research for a novel. She also claimed that
she how to kill your husband.
Yeah. She also claimed that she had no memory of the morning of Dan's death, because when prosecution questioned her about, like, why is your car here? Like, why are you driving here? Why are you driving here? She's like, literally, I have no memory of this. She called it something like stress-induced memory loss. She claimed that she drove to a Starbucks that morning to get a coffee and then blacked out and got lost in the thought of her novel, and then just drove around aimlessly for hours trying to figure out what to do or not what to do, but she has no memory of what happened. Anyways, the point of this is her getting on stand did not help her case. You can listen to excerpts of the testimony on the Dateline episode, and I'm also going to list numerous other sources that transcribe the trial a little bit, so all good places to listen and read more if you're interested. Although prosecution couldn't bring in the blog post, they did talk about what she had written in it, and there was some pretty dumb things, writing things like, orange isn't my color, if death is going to set me free, jail is not where I want to be. I'm paraphrasing because I don't remember the exact things, but things like that. Mm-hmm. She also quoted in her blog
post, I'd rather die than go to prison.
Yeah, me too. She also said in her blog post that anyone has the ability to kill when pushed into a corner, and she repeated that on the stand when the prosecution questioned her on it. And she went on for a long time talking about, you know, why everyone is capable of killing, but then in this case, in her case, she had no motive to do it, and blah 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 blah. Essentially, should not help her case. Anyways, on June 14th, 2022, which is literally like 3 weeks ago, guys, the jury found Nancy Brophy, Nancy Crampton Brophy, guilty of second degree murder, and she received a life sentence.
Oh, good. And that's parole it. Or no?
I don't know. It's so recent, so that's all I could find. So I'm not sure if there's possibility of parole or not. But she did get convicted.
Good.
That's all she wrote, guys. Well, I was just like thinking about what else to do. I have a few other names that I'm thinking about doing. Obviously, one is thanks to this listener, and one other one that I was reading up on. But yeah, interesting case. So I'm glad I covered it. All right. Well, we'll see you next Thursday with a drink in hand. Don't let the murder thoughts bite. Good night. Bye.